on increasing the quality of the boardroom dialogue. It sounds all so easy. You put a group of people in the room who all had successful executive careers, if it's a supervisory board, or you put together those that had a successful executive career with those that are still working on it, and off you go. You think that this group would be able to add great value to the fortunes of an organization. Those that serve on boards and those that observe board meetings as part of a board evaluation know that a high-quality dialogue is not a given. Things have become very complex, and a high-quality dialogue is based on the willingness and skill of those in the room, as well as the right structures and processes. I'm delighted to talk with David Clutterbuck. David has been involved with boards and governance for more than 30 years. He's a visiting professor at three universities and is author or a co-author of 75 books, including one of the first to explore the role of non-executive directors. Welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. I'm Dr. Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. We make the boards of the most ambitious organizations more effective. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We do this by providing clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. Better Boards clients have access to an innovative digital platform that provides data and comparisons on all dimensions of effective boards, and they can use the platform for their internal as well as part of their fully facilitated external board evaluation. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Hey, David, it's fantastic to see you contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
It's a pleasure.
I can remember the time, you know, when I did my coach training in the UK and you were sitting in the corner constantly typing on yet another book. So it's nice to meet again on this occasion.
I'm still waiting to see my copies. They haven't arrived yet, of my 75th book.
Oh, fantastic.
And that's a retrospective look, the work that I've done, the theories and concepts developed over getting on for 45 years in the areas of governance, of leadership, of communications and coaching and mentoring. And the way that we think about all these things and how that's changed dramatically over that period.
That's a really good probe. I mean, we are talking here about how we can increase the quality of the dialogue in the boardroom. I mean, there are so many things boards have to deal with at the moment. It's multifaceted, isn't it? And so many things they should do. Everyone says, oh, you should do this, you should do this. There's ESG, there is climate, there are supply chain challenges, there's inflation, et cetera, et cetera. So many issues. What impact, when you observe boards at the moment, what impact does it really have on the dynamics in the boardroom at present?
Well, in boards that haven't got their act together, what we see is them desperately trying to solve all these problems themselves. And that's not the board's role. The board's role is to make sure that all these issues are identified and that processes are put in place to manage them and to monitor the quality of those processes. But the board's role is not to do all this stuff. It's basically there to raise that awareness and put in place the executives who can actually go out and do the research, come up with the strategies, come up with the tactics to implement those strategies and report back to the board. But the biggest mistake that I see is boards getting involved too much in the detail and therefore doing far too less or actually getting in the way of executives doing their job.
No, I can absolutely confirm this. That in times of crisis, very often the line between executives and non-executives really gets blurred.
It does indeed. It doesn't help when we see that from our research into post-COVID leadership with the conference board, it's very clear that there's quite a strong deficit in terms of the capabilities of people who are in senior executive roles compared with what's needed in a VUCA world where everything keeps changing. And so the need to be able to think not in linear ways in terms of cause and effect and so forth, but to think systemically and complex adaptive systemically, or even more so. And so one of the key qualities of a board is to be able to rise above the complexity and to help the executive steer through that. Now, what we're seeing so often in boards which are not very effective is that they are still thinking in linear ways. I think it's now one of the key competencies of a director to be a strong systemic thinker.
Help our listeners to really understand, what do you mean by systemic thinking?
I'll take a very simple example I often use. Down in the organization, in a particular team, you see some conflict between two people. And a linear approach would say, go bang their heads together to help them sort it out. A systemic approach would say, well, now the conflict is caused by things around them and by and in the space between them. So let's try and manage that situation. A complex adaptive systemic approach would say, well, hang on, no, the conflict is also caused by what's happening between other bits of the organization that are putting pressure on them. And so the more each layer becomes more and more complex as you involve more and more stakeholders and influencers in the process. Now, in a company, it gets bigger and bigger because at the board level, you've not only got all of those interacting systems within the company, but all those that are outside the company, the politics, the economics, the ecosystems issues, all of these things are creating an environment which is constantly evolving, really complex. And we have to be able to work within that complexity. And instead of trying to create certainty, we have to actually be able to live with the uncertainty. And if boards of directors are trying to constantly push for more and more certainty out of their executives, and the executives are having to go along with that, and very often that's the most comfortable place for them too, that's when organizations have suffer from what we call organizational arthritis. They're not able to move fast enough.
Yeah, and I've seen this very often. Executives being sent back again and again to gather more information, come back with more information, and then still no decision is done in the boardroom. I think a lot of listeners will recognize this because it's probably happening in their boardroom as well.
Absolutely. Well, there was some research done a few years ago that looked at the number of significant decisions taken by boards and then compared that with their overall profitability and longevity. And it was quite interesting. I think it was about 4-1. The proportion of significant decisions taken at board meetings and those that were highest performing. So you take lots of decisions, basically often without enough information, but you can, and knowing that you can change things, but you've got to keep moving.
But that is very scary, isn't it? Because on a lot of these new topics, climate, ESG, cybersecurity, there is no certainty or there is no sufficient data. So basically, non-executives are forced to really jump into the unknown. That can be a pretty scary place, can't it?
Absolutely, because you're taking responsibility for something where you don't know how it's going to work out. I personally believe where non-executives can often add greatest value is by helping the organization steer through these uncertainties. And to be able to get a clear path, knowing that things are not always going to go as expected, but having that agility to change your direction as it becomes clear that what you were intending to do isn't right. Where we see so many big companies collapsing is because they've stuck too long to a strategy that they could have abandoned months or years before, but they'd said, well, we're committed to this, we're going to make it happen. And when it became clear that that everything was moving in a different direction, they were still hanging on to the rock before the tide came in.
I mean, we can probably talk for hours on these phenomena, but let's look more through a solution lens here. What do the good boards do that you are seeing? I mean, what are they doing to really increase the quality of the dialogue in order to really deal with these challenges?
One of the things that we're seeing is an increasing emphasis on values and ethics. So the question for the board that it should be considering regularly, at least once a quarter, is, are we living up to our values? And if the board isn't doing that, then the answer is almost to that question is almost certainly no, you're not. And so that's one thing. You can create an agile climate in an organization in many ways, but having a strong sense of ethicality is one of the ways in which you do this. That if you have a strong sense of ethicality, you're more likely to have a strong psychological safety in the organization, for example. And the board concentrating on ensuring that the executives really do create the kind of environment where people can feel safe enough to take risks, appropriate risks, innovation is really going to happen fast, and people are not going to be shot down for having or putting forward good ideas, where people can challenge things they don't think are right or bring innovations against the tide. So all of those things, it's part of the board's role to make sure that the executives are doing that. And these that one and boards that I've been impressed by, they're monitoring it. They're saying, well, okay, tell us what's happening in the organization. And it's not just a point about doing an employee opinion survey. It's about all multiple indicators of how people feel that they can really contribute and make a difference. And so that organizational climate is now a big part of that organizational agility that prevents organizational arthritis. So there's a whole bunch of things you can do there, but you can also look at the way that you conduct your board meetings. Long had a thing since we did studies back in the 1990s of good boardroom practice, the idea of the typical board agenda. It starts with apologies for absence, minutes of the last meeting, matters arising, and all of this stuff, which could have been done by email beforehand, takes up the first 45 minutes or more of the meeting. And that first 45 minutes of the meeting is the time when your brains are most productive before people start getting tired. So we're using the most valuable time of the meeting for rubbish, basically, for non-productive stuff, just by scrapping all that and saying, so what's important to talk about? And a simple tool that boards I've been working with is simply to give a score to all the items that could go on the agenda. And there's always more than you have time for. And so you give a score of up to 10 for urgency and up to 20 for importance. And then you multiply the two scores. And that gives you a ranking order for where you ought to be putting your productive, your mental energy. So the items with the highest scores are the first ones in the agenda.
And you suggest the rating to be done before. Before the actual meeting, and then really stick to that order.
Exactly. Because what happens normally is the really important things get left to last. We'll have enough time for them. But of course, you never do, because somebody always talks too much. And so you end up rushing those really important matters.
That's a good practical tip. Thank you. Our listeners really like practical tips.
Yeah. Here's another one, which I think is really important, is how we make decisions. I go into boards and I say, how do you make decisions? And they say, well, we have a discussion and then we have a vote. And we say, well, how do you think that stacks up with evidenced good practice? And everybody looks a bit blank. So what that basically does, it tends to push people towards going along with the majority. It tends to suppress contrarian views because everybody wants to be loyal. And also it relies far too much on emotion. The mix of emotion and rationality is important. You basically vote on how you feel about an issue. And a much better way of doing this is to say, okay, what are the criteria by which we're judging this decision? And there might be, say, five key criteria. And then you take each criterion and then you say, okay, so let's discuss in terms of that criterion, what's proposed, those criteria, like that criterion. And if the answer is yes from the majority, that's one thing. And if the answer is no from the majority, you can say, okay, so what would have to happen to make that proposal meet that criterion? So what you're doing is a much more detailed, much more focused analysis of the proposals that are put in front of you. It very often means that you throw things back to resolve issues that have come up as a result of that process that you've just been through. The likelihood of that proposal or that decision being implementable in an effective way is increased dramatically. And everybody knows what they're actually agreeing to in detail rather than a general principle.
Help us to understand. I agree with you, but equally I'm seeing there's so much under time pressure. You already gave us a hint what they can do to not end up under time pressure. What you're suggesting there would take up a little bit more time for a discussion, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would. But then you compare that with the time when things come back to the board because they aren't working. And actually you save a lot of time.
Can you give us another nice tip, what you have seen really working to increase the quality of the dialogue in the boardroom?
One of the things that came out of some research we did back in the 1990s, we looked at how the board treated people from outside. So other people coming in to give a presentation, and it caused dramatic resentment but from outsiders and insiders. We had loads of stories. People said, well, I was told my presentation would be for an hour and it would start at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then at 3:30, they called me and said, could you cut your presentation down to 15 minutes? What does that do to the reputation of the board? The assumption that your time is much more valuable than the time of the people who sat outside cooling their heels in the corridor. And thinking about the reputation of the board is, I think, an important part, making a board really effective, because you have a reputation to live up to for being concerned and connected with the organization. It doesn't mean to say that you have to be deep into the bowels of the organization, constantly going and interfering. I think my worst example of that was a non-executive director of a hospital trust who was found wandering around, thought he could go anywhere in a hospital, and ended up walking into an operating theater in the midst of a heart operation. That's probably an extreme of what not to do. But that connectedness and really listening to what people in the organization need from the board.
What I'm very often hearing is also that the quality of the dialogue in the boardroom depends on how the time between the board meetings is spent. Any tips, tricks you have seen what's really working to basically make better use of the time in between the board meetings to have a higher quality of discussion during the board meetings?
We did a piece of research last year where we asked human resource directors around the world the simple question, what is it that you know now that you become that you've been an HR director for some years that you wish you'd known before you became an HR director? And we have lots of wonderful data from this. And clearly, one person who humorously said, don't do it, but I think he was saying that tongue in cheek. But one of the key things was that if you're going to be presenting a paper at the board meeting, you can save an awful lot of time simply by having short briefing sessions with your colleagues on the board to explain why you're presenting this and what the key parts of it are. That simple, so that the questions that get asked at the board meeting are questions that come when they've had time to reflect upon it. If people haven't had time to think about an issue and it's just sort of sprung on them in the boardroom papers the day before, the questions they ask are just not as good. You just by having those short conversations, a 10-minute conversation at most very often with each of your colleagues on the board, prepares everybody for making good use of that collective time together. Another technique that we use a lot, when there's a really difficult or complex issue to discuss, we ask everybody to reflect for 5 minutes or at most, usually just a couple. And once they get used to the routine, they'll have done this in advance anyway. But we ask everybody to write down their responses to three questions. The first question is, what do you want to say about this issue? The second question is, what do you want to hear other people say about this issue? And the third question is, what do you want to achieve from this discussion? And everybody reads out what they've said. There's no discussion until everybody has spoken. Then you get on with the conversation, with the dialogue. And what happens out of this is several things. The first thing is that it actually takes a lot less time for the discussion because everybody knows where everybody else is coming from. The second thing is that the behavior towards each other is much more positive because you can say things like, look, I know that you've got some concerns about this issue. So are we addressing those? And the third thing that we find, it's much less likely that once the decision is made, somebody will try and remake it. They didn't feel that they were listened to or able to speak their mind. And so when it's clear that there's a consensus or it appears there's a consensus, the chairperson then asks everybody, did you say what you wanted to say? Did you hear what you wanted to hear? Did you achieve what you wanted to achieve? And once they've done that and gone around and everybody says yes, then they can move on. But if somebody says no, then you go back around that particular circuit. It's a very powerful way of making sure that you really do get all of the opinions around the table about an issue.
Fantastic. We could talk for hours, but typically listeners don't have the patience for it. So we need to come to an end. And we always ask, what are the three things our listeners shall take away from this podcast?
Well, the first one is don't get too involved in running the business. Recognize your role as being a director, not an executive. Now, of course, if you're an executive director, you've got to learn how to break those two roles apart. And again, in the study that we did of human resource directors, that was one of the biggest challenges that people faced, to let go of doing and their functional role and make sure that they delegate as much as they could of that so they could focus on strategy. There are so many things that we could also say, but I think having that sense of what you're there for as a board, so you're focusing down on things that really matter. We didn't really talk about the whole area of good ancestry, but when we actually think about it, why is the board there? And that helps us to structure and prioritize the things we talk about. I strongly believe we should be questioning on a regular basis, are the things we're doing really creating value for the future, the medium term and long term future? Are we falling into the trap, the near future and the profitability of right now? And of course, that fundamental question, are we actually creating the conditions for a company that will still be there in 10, 15, 20 or more years time? Given the fact that the half-life of businesses around the world is shrinking year by year, nobody's got a right as a business to be around in 20 years time. Those that last 20 years or more are the minority in most sectors. So we have some real challenges there. How are we going to help the business to survive? And a third thing, I think it really is to be that ethical conscience of the business, to not to forget that we're there for a much bigger purpose than just making decisions on investments tomorrow or today. It's about seeing your role in a totality.
Fantastic, David. Thank you ever so much also for giving lots of practical tips and tricks to our listeners for increasing the quality of the boardroom dialogue. Thank you so much for being there.
Well, there's one thing I often point out, that the word board in English could also be spelled B-O-R-E-D, board stiff. And indeed, the word board in its original etymology comes from a table. And the tables at the time were made of short, thick planks. And basically, that word is also related to the word bordello. So there's a lot of history behind the word board. And of course, dialogue, can sometimes we refer what we see in board meetings as dialogue, D-I-R-E, log, because it's so bad. But, you know, it's such wonderful. We can joke about really bad board meetings. But when we see a really good board meeting, it's a joy to behold because people are committed, engaged, they're supportive, but questioning. The difference is enormous, and it's wonderful to see that.
Thank you so much, David. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
As always, please do not hesitate to get in touch. If you have any comment about this podcast, if you want to suggest another topic, or if you would like to learn about our work and book a demo for the Better Boards Board Evaluation Platform, you can best reach us at info@better-boards.com. Thank you for listening.